From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Got another episode this week, and got my compatriots over there in Dallas. How you going, Hunter?
Oi, oi, oi. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Getting over this lurgy that's been sweeping the nation over here for the last three goddamn months.
Ouch.
Yeah, moving into spring finally, so hopefully get some good weather. Good sun, get myself all bronzed up and all that sort of good stuff. And over in Colorado, I can't say Colorado out loud still. Hello, John.
Where's my dog at? Yo.
Yeah. Don't know. Go eat some more hash and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, bro, that's all we're about.
Yeah, really, like...
It's all Galen skiing and weed, bro.
Yeah, really, yeah. It's like, imagine skiing high, I suppose.
People say things like Snoochie Boochies all the time. Yeah. Just like Kevin Smith.
So, do they have, like, a poster of Sonny Bono over there saying, don't get high and ski, because... You'll wind up like...
Nobody remembers who he is. Don't get
high and ski, otherwise you'll hit a tree, just like Sonny did. Just like Sonny did.
Yeah, because he's a California guy, so...
Yeah, but he died in Colorado, didn't he?
Yeah, but skiing accidents happen all the time.
Yeah, okay.
There's always somebody who runs into a tree and dies, so it's not something I'm in a hurry to learn. Plus, these days, it's barely upper-class yuppie sport, so...
Do you live far from Aspen?
Probably about 3 hours.
Oh, so a fair whack of a way. All right.
I've never done the drive. I've been to Vail, which is the second famous ski resort, but Aspen's where all the celebrities live.
That's until you get your beekeeping underway, and then you'll be the most famous area.
Because I have that Australian beehive.
Yeah, that's right.
Flow hive.
Flow hive. Oh, Lord. Anyway, so we're just going to be... talking about, we're going to try and sell each other a film that one of us has seen, but the other two have not. And just going to tear into that briefly. It's something that that John dreamed up, obviously, while like on some sort of crazed, you know, honey rush.
He said, "I have a dream today."
I actually think I was doing a very sobering act, like a trap bar deadlift, and probably thought of it.
Did you?
I was like, I come up with ideas for the show because I'm listening to like some crazy Viking metal while I'm dipping the lips, and then I'm like,
John's like listening to Moonstar going, on movies, it's a pretty good idea.
That's where the inspiration comes. Yeah,
listening. Okay, so there you go, listeners. That's how this episode's streamed up. John deadlifting.
Not a lot of gym rats on other podcasts, so proud to say. That's where we come up with it.
Who listened to Viking metal, by the way?
Like, John was doing some reps, and he goes, "Gonna do some sell each other a movie. That's a good idea. Hashtag pressure to power."
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Hashtag Nordic rock.
Although this week I'm thinking of actually cycling off from weights for a while, so I don't know if cardio is gonna bring the inspiration or push-ups.
Yeah. What was that picture you posted of that carb brownies or something, or low carb brownies or something?
I don't recall posting anything. No, I didn't post anything like that.
I think what John was posting about something that he I think I know what you're talking about, Stuart.
Yeah.
John posted about something like he was posting temptations of, because he's cutting calories now, and he was posting
stories
about temptations. That's what it was.
There was a mention that Hershey's was going to remove high fructose corn syrup.
That's it. Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And I said, damn, right when I'm cutting calories and deciding I actually want to get lean, then they announce this, but maybe that's about 6 months off.
Mm. Okay.
I've been working out at 5. The problem is like by 1 o'clock, I don't know. I eat lunch, but I'm still like, I don't know.
Hang on, wait. You train what time? You train at 5 a.m. or 5 p.m.?
5 a.m.
You train at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, mate.
Well, more like 5:30. I get up at 5, but
what do you do? Lift Jackie up 10 times and call out?
No, I run up to the gym because it's pretty close to where I live. But it's because I don't like working out before work. It kind of it just makes my day go better in terms of productivity. But I'm also like I'm also dead tired by 4. Like I'm ready to go to bed. You know,
dude, you're a fucking night owl. I don't even know how you get any sleep.
I'm not like right now I'm up, but I'm during the week I'm in bed by 9.
Good usually. Lord. Who's the old man of this group here now? Shit.
No, I know. Well, it's just my schedule's changed because of work. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but like I hate going to the gym in the evening because it's crowded.
It's crowded, yeah, yeah.
It's crowded as fuck, and I'm not as motivated to go, you know. In the morning, if you start off your day that way, it just getting those endorphins going in the morning.
Yeah.
It just makes your day go better. Like it helps fight anxiety and all that stuff.
Oh, they say that's some of the best times to train. You know, is first thing in the morning as soon as you wake. I mean, I haven't got the energy for that.
It's definitely tough. I mean,
I'm like a walk around in my fucking singlet and underwear, man, with a, you know, giant iced coffee until about midday. I'm like, ugh.
Right.
You know, I was going to start a habit of getting up at 5:30 and doing a power walk, and I did it one day, and the dog was crying because I left early, and it was before anybody else was up, so I couldn't do it anymore.
Oh.
So.
Just kick the goddamn mutt in the fucking balls and say, shut up.
We don't do this. This is in Australia, mate.
Yeah, you're supposed to be like that Michael Vick or whatever his name. Michael Vick? Or...
No, Michael Vick is his own problem.
Here's my thing is when I leave, like Jackie will be walking and then she'll see me open the door and she just stops and stares at me.
You know, those little eyes going, don't leave me here.
She just stares at me. It's
funny, I thought about it. I think Michael Vick is actually more hated in this country than like Bundy.
Oh, yeah. Michael Vick is like there's Adolf
Except
Hitler.
By football fans. They don't care. The football fans don't care, but everybody else is like, he's the worst.
No,
worst
my
human
football
friends.
My friends who were football fans were like, everybody deserves a second chance. Everybody deserves a shot at redemption, you know, like blah, blah, blah. And, but everybody else was like, you know, they probably like Hitler and bin Laden and Stalin more than Michael Vick, you know.
They were like, cocksucker, motherfucker, it's die. It's families need to die. You know, they hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the type of people who are like anti-death penalty, and they're like, "We need to be killed," you know,
like Tom Jennings.
Oh, yeah.
Don't hang nobody. It doesn't solve nothing. What does it solve? Killing people? Nothing at all.
Oh,
mm.
Love you, Tom.
I don't. You can keep the ashes. You can have those stinking ashes that probably just evaporated over the 100-plus years of the game. Carry empty trophy, you poms.
So, John, you saw a friend of the show last night.
Yes, Scheme Richards was spinning at a club called Ophelia's, and they had a art and soul show. It was only a $5 cover, so I went down to at least say hi to Scheme and check out the gig. And they had an artist painting these really good portraits on stage, and he was doing Jimi Hendrix when I got in and was working on that most of the night. And Scheme was spinning all sorts of soul and funk obscurities that would just had everybody blown away because that he had two young DJs who I believe were local, and those guys were spinning, but they spin good tunes, but they're tunes you've heard before. Scheme would spin stuff that's amazing and you've never heard it.
Of course.
It would be like, and I was looking at his 45 collection because he saw me in the crowd, and because I'm wearing like a Shogun Assassin t-shirt because I didn't spot me right away.
Yeah.
He was like, get around here. And so I was like, went to the side stage and I was talking to him, like, watch the work.
Hey, Hannah. Hannah. Sorry, I'm just shocked now that Scheme sounds like Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
Get away out of
this shotgun, man.
This is why Scheme sounded like that, and he sounded so cool and restrained on our show. Really loud over by the DJ booth. The music is super loud. You have to yell to communicate with each other.
I watched a YouTube video of Scheme a while back, and how that guy doesn't collapse. He's just forever moving beyond those turntables.
He's doing all these techniques with 45s I've never seen. Like, he does like the paper sleeve underneath it and pulls it out like a magician and has it spinning and then he's working on the next one. And
he's doing the Shaolin style.
Yeah, that he's digging through a briefcase. He's got this case, this box with all these 45s, and he just like pulls them out, got a stack, and he looks like, you know, it's like the late 70s Kung Fu movies where they're like doing the Jackie Chan Drunken Master type thing or something with cooking, except he's doing it with like DJ spinning. So it's pretty neat to watch.
See, that's where the art of it comes in. See, if that was me as a DJ, I'd be like, make a big, long 90-minute wave file and just play it.
Yeah, it's like, he does it, man. He does it old school, all vinyl, and there's no cheat. Watch him do it. It's a pretty amazing sight. So if Scheme is on the wheels of steel in your town or your country, because he does tour different foreign countries quite a bit, he's a globetrotter. Definitely check him out if you can. It's really worth it.
Yeah, I'm waiting on him to come to Dallas. I'll definitely hit it when he does.
Yeah, call him a DJ frequent flyer points O'Plenty.
All I can say is he played this Sister Sledge tune that is like, nah, I'm obsessed with Finding. He wouldn't tell me the title, so it's like, damn
no, of
it.
Course.
Yeah. So the million-dollar question.
His rhymes? His beats?
No. The million-dollar question is, did you hit him up about doing the show with us or what?
No, I didn't get to talk. We didn't get to talk much about that. We're just talking about film prints and screenings. And
a lot
of Shaw titles are being screened. But I'm going to talk to him on messaging about doing another show and maybe some collaborations. Cool. You know, he's totally up for it. He supports the show.
Yeah, you got to talk about them stupid Asian movies, don't you? Stupid fucking martial arts movies.
Yeah, but we're going to do a Stuart Free show. So
I was thinking the other day, I was like, Stuart always gives a shit about Asian movies, but he really liked those there Raid films.
Oh, I did. No, I'm talking about the really silly bloody martial arts ones, you know? Like, was it the Return of the Five Deadly Venoms? Or Bozos who came up with that title.
The movie's great, though.
Yeah, I coined one of its
fake titles. It's one of the dumbest film titles I've ever heard of.
Well, it's now back to being screened or streamed as Crippled Avengers.
Which is a goddamn shame. It's because everybody found out that John came up with...
On Hulu Plus, you can watch it. It's Crippled Avengers.
Everybody was like, fuck that right-wing jackass. We're going back to...
I guess the heavy influence on Asian cinema that Rick Myers had must have got to change back to its original title, right?
Oh, jeez. Well, he probably got the title wrong.
Yeah, the Crippled Deadly Venoms or some shit.
Return of the Super Ninjas?
Yeah.
Or whatever. You know.
Return of the Band-Aid Heads or whatever.
Yeah.
Band-Aid Heads.
If you read that cool-ass cinema post, it makes sense.
Oh, really?
Did you read all, like, 8 parts of that?
I didn't read the whole thing. I read some of it.
It's incredible. It's like this 8 part.
Is that the one that somebody found? I saw a part 7 or something where people just fucking called him out and he was everything wrong about everything. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, that's one of, like, 8 pieces. I know the guy who wrote it, and I think he's written about 8 pieces.
No, it was up to, like, error number 214 or something. It was like, what the fuck? It was like,
I think it was going to be a part 9. I think he said he was working on a part 9 because he popped up on my wall. We were laughing at the crowdfunding. And he said there's enough to work on a part 9, he believes. So.
Good Lord. Who needs a 9-part Star Wars series if you got a 9-part series on the screw-ups of Rick Myers? I don't even know the guy. It just sounds funny, this long-standing feud between he and the rest of the martial arts folk out there.
Well, I think it's because if you have somebody who appoints themselves like the leader and the expert and the one everybody needs to listen to, and you actually haven't done the groundwork to really justify that, I think that's where a lot of that comes from.
And the thing is,
sure, there's somebody similar in horror. Yeah, I mean, if you think about horror movies and science fiction movies, there's always somebody like that that everybody's like, oh, he's really full of shit. Or
yeah, they become really vicious with the fact that
Harry Knowles.
Harry, yeah.
Use that as an example. I mean, there's always I've found that in all genres, there's always that one writer who had like one or two books and then appointed himself an expert, and then everybody's like, nah, he's full of
it. And William Goldman. I read his John Lennon book. It's like, oh, really?
Oh, no, that's Albert Goldman.
Oh, sorry. Albert Goldman.
William Goldman wrote Marathon Man. He's actually a good
guy. All right, wrong.
I was about to say, William Goldman's written some big movies
okay,
there.
Okay, no, I stand correct. Albert Goldman. It's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Albert Goldman's the worst. And I mean, nobody liked Albert Goldman, but a lot of people bought those books.
Yeah, I was one of them, I think. Or was it Dad bought? One of us did. Anyway, happy Father's Day, Dad, for yesterday. Sorry, I forgot the ring. I was not feeling well. Yeah, so you caught up with Scheme, so that's really cool. I can't wait to get him back on.
Yeah, it's going to be rad.
Going to be rad indeed.
Well, he I can report he found a print of Godfathers of Hong Kong, so.
Oh, good.
Which he was looking for.
On vinyl or the movie?
The movie.
Oh, okay.
Supposedly it didn't exist, like, anywhere. Like, you couldn't find it. And then he found a guy who has it, and the guy said, it does pop up for sale on eBay every now and then.
And the guy said, I'll only charge you $10,000 for it.
Oh, if only Garrow had found that, he probably would have made a little money off the hardcore fans.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Because apparently a number of people were looking for that movie. And who knows why? I mean, it's probably not very good. It's like 1973. It's not really, you know, there's no like big talent behind it. It's like, but I think it's just in a lot of cases, and it's like that with music and even other movies. It just because something's rare, it becomes sought after because nobody's seen it or nobody can remember seeing it.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to get Garrow back on the show when he's able.
Yes, what's up, Garrow?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Sending good vibes to Garrow.
That's it.
Peace definitely to the Armenian nation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is where we play some System of a Down music or something. I don't
know. just quickly. Well, what? Get into it?
I was just going to say, do we want to just get into the movies?
Sure. You guys can start off first.
What do you think, John? You want to go first?
You can go first if you want.
Okay, I'll go first.
Because we already talked about Asian stuff, so I'm like, okay, and since I've got a film to talk about.
Well, my film is decided.
Topic over.
Yeah. Mine is decidedly not Asian. Mine is a film by Jack Hill, and it's known by the title Pit Stop. Although if you watch the movie, it's also called The Winner, and it's also been known as Winning, not with Charlie Sheen. But Pit Stop is what you'd find it under on Blu-ray and DVD. And I don't know. Are you guys big Jack Hill fans? I assume Stuart is, because Coffee and Foxy Brown and all that.
Sure. And he did, was it, the Spider Long Chain? Spider Baby, yes. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And Arrow Video also.
Switchblade Sisters.
Switchblade Sisters as well, yeah.
Yeah, he did Switchblade. Yeah. He did Big Birdcage, a couple of those women in prison movies.
Any guy who can give us some Pam Grier titties is always good in my book.
Well, Jack Hill has given us plenty of that, you know. But, Pit Stop is this movie. It came out in 1969, and I wasn't aware of it until I saw it on the new release shelf at the video store, and I went, huh. I saw it was from Arrow Video, and I really like what they've been doing lately, and their stuff. They're a British label, but their stuff's starting to come out over here, and I just saw that they released this movie called Pit Stop. I hadn't heard of it, and I picked it up and I saw it was by Jack Hill, and I was like, this is a Jack Hill movie I haven't seen. And so I just bought it sight unseen, and I loved it. It stars Richard Davalos, who you might know from East of Eden, and it also has Sid Haig.
Of course it does.
One of his best roles, I should note, as Hawk Sidney. It's my favorite Sid Haig role by a mile. Sorry, Captain Spaulding fans. And it has a very, very young Ellen Burstyn, who's in the movie under a pseudonym, Ellen McRae. I didn't even recognize her in the movie. She's so young. I didn't realize it was her. But I blind bought it. I watched it, and it's my it might be my favorite Jack Hill movie. It's one of these kind of teenage rebel movies. It was produced by Roger Corman. And he told he saw one of Hill's kind of no-budget movies. I can't remember what the name of it was, but I'd never heard of it. And he said that Corman approached him and said he wanted him to do a movie about stock car racing. And Jack Hill said he had zero interest. He said he didn't think stock car racing was interesting, didn't really want to do it, but it was a good opportunity for his career. So when he was doing research for the movie, he found out about figure eight racing. Do you guys know what that is?
Yeah, well, they do shit in figure eight.
Stuart, where'd you go? You sound like you're a mile away.
Bending over.
I used to have a race car set when I was a kid that was in that figure eight diagram.
Yeah.
Or design, you know.
Yeah, it's like the racetracks in a figure eight, and so it leaves a lot of opportunities for car wrecks.
Right. Which is all the fans care about.
Goddamn petrol heads.
And Jack Hill went, that's cool. And he noticed that he said all the races took place at night, which kind of makes it look cool on film. But so the movie's about this, you know, this kid who's doing street racing and this old man, I think it's the guy from the Quatermass experiment, Brian Don Levy. And he picks him up and says, like, you know, you got to come race for me. And he goes and races in this figure eight thing. And, you know, Sid Haig is kind of his rival champion. And, you know, this guy's, you know, trying to race to be the best and kind of starts to lose himself along the way. But the racing in it was real exciting. It was really crazy and chaotic. It was just a lot of fun. And it had that like late 60s sort of teen type thing, like guys smoking cigarettes, working on cars in the junkyard, you know?
Which was a perfectly acceptable subculture and hobby back then.
Right. And you know, they're
nowadays it would be called a redneck and, you know, a thug or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, like, because this guy, he'll go in and get in a race and he'll crash his car and then he has to go back to the junkyard and get his car ready for the next race to inevitably smash it again. But it has a really cool soundtrack, and it was it's apparently done by ex-members of the Daily Flash, a psychedelic band. Okay. But it's really it's got a really cool, that kind of cool, like, kind of bass lines and stuff from the 60s,
the Dave Allen and the Arrows type of fuzz guitar,
right, and
I hope,
and it has that kind of like that sort of boom 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 and some guitars, and it was pretty cool soundtrack, but I blind bought it, and it was short, sweet. It had a, you know, it was very well made. It might be my favorite Jack Hill movie. I'm not sure. I need to go back and watch some of his other movies. But so I've seen most of them, but I've, you know, it's been a little while since I've seen some of them. And but it was very entertaining, and I've watched it a few times since I got it. But there was some controversy with the Blu-ray. I noticed there were two Blu-ray editions at the store. Okay. The Arrow Video one is definitely the more packed of them. But there was another one that was put out recently, and apparently the guy from that company went on a tirade on social media claiming he was ripped off by Arrow or something, that they stole from him or something. I don't know. Richard Kuhn was telling me about it, but the Arrow releases looks like the one to go with, just based on looking at what there is to offer on it.
From what I'm told, the Arrow release is always the one you want to go for.
They're one of the
best.
In
any circumstance. Any circumstance. Like, I've only got their Day of Anger Blu-ray, which I haven't
even
opened yet.
I've got that one, too.
I'm sure it's the definitive edition. I went ahead and traded in my old Wild Beast DVD.
I got their edition of The Beyond. I have their edition of...
Oh, I have
that,
too. I did get that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have their edition of Battle Royale and Cemetery Without Crosses, Society, Contamination, putting out a lot of crazy stuff.
Oh, you own a Arrow buying spree there.
Yeah.
Look at you, Mr. Arrow Shelf.
Oh, and I also got their
Arrow Spider. Shelf. How to do sing. Got all the arrows. Shelf. I got a few. Yeah, I got a few.
I also got Spider Baby. So.
Oh, how does that look on Blu-ray? Good?
It looks good.
Yeah.
I had never seen it. That was another Jack Hill movie I'd never seen, but I had heard a lot about that one.
Oh, you know who loves that film, don't you? Our friend.
Oh.
Rob Zombie.
Oh, of course.
And we named a goddamn song after it.
Right. Yep. But yeah, so Pit Stop's definitely a fun one to check out if you're looking for like kind of 60s cars and rock and roll and all that good stuff. Car wrecks.
All right. Yeah. We'll have to see if it's available here, because the state of the Australian dollar at the moment, everything's like about 15 times as much. So.
Blame China. It's all their fault.
Yeah, you Chinese fucks. Thanks a lot.
We built empty skyscrapers.
Yeah.
Although everywhere in China seems to be just blowing up these days. Just literally exploding.
Does it?
Yeah, there's all those videos of like chemical plants blowing up. Like it's happened like there's been like three in a couple weeks.
Oh.
I'll have to send you one of the videos. It's terrifying.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, you call it terrifying. I call it. That's all right. Am I joking?
God, it was one of those things where I would be like, "Well, I would think the world was ending if I was there right now." You know.
Yeah, but you're not.
I know.
Yeah, you're not. All right. So very good. So what's it called? Pit Stop.
Pit Stop. Yep.
Okay. Now, what makes you? I want to ask you a question because you do a lot of blind buying, don't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What makes you want to lash out $20-$25 for something that you potentially may dislike?
Well, I will say for this one, I didn't have to pay anything for it. What happened was...
you stole it, right, mate?
No, I didn't.
Oh, shit.
But here's what happened. I was at my friend's wedding rehearsal because I was in his wedding. So we were at the rehearsal the night before. And he asked me... if I could get him a copy of this Mastodon record for his kid, because his kid really liked this song on on Mastodon's The Hunter LP, and I had gotten a copy of it recently, but the place that I got it from for really cheap was sold out, so I just said I'll go ahead and give you my copy. You know, I don't really listen to it that much, and he was like, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" I was like, "Yeah, it's fine." You know, and so I gave it to him, and he had this stack of movies in his car, and he goes, "I was going to sell these at Movie Trading Company." He goes, "You just take them and sell them, and get something for yourself at Movie Trading Company." And I went, "Okay," and I took them in, and I got like $25 in store credit, and so I saw Pit Stop on the shelf, and I just like was like, "I'll get that."
Okay, so that's not a bad little trade off.
So yeah, it wasn't really any skin off my nose to get it, but
that reminds me of a story. From many years ago, like about 80, I want to say about 88, 89, about 88, I think it was. There was a guy I knew who was a bit older than I was, and he was moving house, and he had a ton, like you would have flipped if you had seen how much vinyl he had, all metal as well, all metal and rock and shit like that. And he says to me, "Hey, Stuart, I got nowhere to store these vinyl LPs," like, yeah, not all of them, but he had quite a few crates. He goes, "You've got an empty garage. Can I store them there?" And I said, "Yeah, it'd be fine." And kept them there for, I think it was a couple of weeks or something like that. And he comes and picks them up. He goes, "So before I go, whatever vinyl you want here, just help yourself to." I'm like, look, found nothing. You know what was in there now? Now that I remembered years ago what was in there? All the first pressing Sam Haines stuff on vinyl.
Oh, God.
All the, like, even the fucking EP that's, like, just ridiculously out of print for years.
Unholy Passion.
Yeah, that's it. Because I remember definitely Initium being at the front of the box thinking, "What is this shit?
Who are these idiots coming?"
Yeah, really. And I'm like, and I remember just, like, seeing all the Sam Haines, and I think November Coming Fire was in there as well. Yeah, it would have been by then, by about 88, for sure.
I remember seeing you like a CD of November Coming Fire in Scotland, and I didn't know about Samhain at the time.
Yeah.
And I saw that Danzig skull, and I went, that's the skull from the Danzig albums, which is from some Marvel comic. And I went, that's the skull from, and I opened it up, and I was like, this is a band with Glenn Danzig, you know? Because I knew the Misfits, and I knew Danzig, but I didn't know Samhain, so.
Yeah, yeah. Did you pick it up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I bought mine fucking years and years ago when they were still new on that, what was that label yet? Evil Live or Caroline or whatever it was?
Right, yeah.
Still got them in the garage. So
yeah, it still is label.
Yeah, now they go for some stupid price as well.
Right, yeah. Yeah, although I think they just repressed the a few of the Samhain albums on vinyl. So I was seeing them new at the store the other day.
Oh, what were they asking, 40?
No, like $20 or something.
Wow, I was surprised you didn't pick them up.
Yeah, I don't know. I was there for something else, I think. But
not that Mad Max vinyl piece of shit, was it?
No, this was before that. Oh, good. But no, the Samhain albums. My thing is with those, with that run of Danzig's career, is that the albums were always really, I thought, shoddily produced.
Oh, you're terrible.
I mean, like, oh, Initium sounds horrid. Like shit.
You know? They're up there with the fucking early Venom albums in terms of bad sound.
I mean, you thought those early Dictators albums sounded bad. Ooh,
Venom and early Hanoi Rocks, it's like just treble, echoey mess. Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
There's almost no bass. And I mean, it's all those albums to me. It sounds like it's recorded in a trash can in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the studios probably were trash cans. They're that small. John, you want to go next?
Sure. Mine is Kenji Mizumi's.
Sorry, yep. Before we go, what would you rate the film, Hannah? Out of
I'd give it like an 8.
8. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's really. I highly recommend it. If you like, if you like any Jack Hill movies you've ever seen, and you like cars, rock and roll, rebelliousness, car wrecks. And Sid Haig looking young and thin, and Ellen Bernstein looking young and unrecognizable. Then you're there. There you go. Like Sid Haig, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm used to old fat Sid Haig, you know,
old fat bearded Sid Haig, as opposed to
Like, I was like, here he's
Mr. Arrow Shelf right there.
Yeah,
Mr. Arrow Shelf over here.
Mr.
We need to. Hey John, we need to get a picture of Hannah's head and. Morph it onto the season pictures of the TV show Arrow. And just like...
Mr. Arrow Shelf. Just,
let's name it Mr. Arrow Shelf.
And do like plus a bookshelf, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he's just like, yeah, like Photoshop a bookshelf in the back. Yeah,
should right. Get an Arrow video tattoo.
Yeah, the A symbol on your arm or something like
Mr.
that.
Mr. Arrow Shelf.
Mr. Arrow Shelf over there.
Yeah, that's the name of the show, actually, by the way, Mr. Arrow Shelf. Yeah. All right, John.
Yeah, mine is Kenji Misumi's The Last Samurai. This is of no relation to the Tom Cruise film.
I was going to say, dude, the Tom Cruise Last Samurai.
I was bringing this totally mainstream, dude.
Dude, Ed Zwick, bro.
Zwick, is it off? Cruise is the man. This is Kenji Misumi. Is probably best known to a lot of the listeners for directing most of the Baby Cart films or Lone Wolf and Cub movies, whatever you want to call them. This was his last film. It was his 67th, I think.
Jesus.
He had directed a good bulk of the portion of the Zatto Ichi series and directed a number of like classic samurai movies, although he wasn't considered on the level like a Kurosawa or even Kihachi Akimoto back then. But he was really good, really skilled, and The Last Samurai, his final film, I believe he passed away the next year. This was that movie, it's similar to the Cruise film in one way, is that it's about that transition from the samurai period to modern Japan, and where, you know, the Western influences come over, and they're built, you know, everybody's going to start wearing suits and ties, they're not going to carry the swords around anymore, and this is how a top swordsman in the film who becomes obsessed with following the way of the samurai. He's going to be a barber in the new civilized world, but before that, he seems to kill about
you know, quite a few people. Because this is the Chamber.
When he becomes a barber, is he like, cutting people's hair with a samurai sword and he accidentally cuts their heads in half a few times?
I was kind of hoping for that because you do have that John Belushi potential there, but no, that's not.
Does he leave on Fleet Street as well?
I was hoping, and we get some song and dance. Didn't happen. This is actually it's a very long film. It's an epic. It's based on a novel. It basically is like watching a novel. It goes through different phases and periods. And his rival in the film, the lead actor, is Hideki Takahashi, I believe that's how it's pronounced, who was a prolific actor of that era. And his rival in the film, who I guess you would call the villain, is Ken Ogata, who played Mishima in Paul Schrader's movie.
Yeah, Ken Ogata is the man. He's awesome.
Yeah, and Ken Ogata probably has the best performance in this film. Really, really makes a lot of the part. Japanese actor is really very expressive, very different from American acting.
They act with their eyes, don't they?
No, they act with their mouth, dude.
Oh, okay.
Hands and everything. They're very, very, it's very theatrical acting, as you know, if you watch Yojimbo or one of the, you know, Kurosawa classics. What a lot of people like about that is the acting. Hence, that's why Criterion doesn't offer the English dub tracks for The Seven Samurai or Yojimbo, even though they're pretty good. It's got blood, it's got some, there's some nudity in there. It's in scope. It's beautiful filmmaking. The score is by Akira Ifukube, who did all the Godzilla films, or all the good touch.
I was hoping you were going to say the score was done by Akira Takahashi, whatever his name is, from Loudness, the guitarist, but no, doesn't matter.
I wonder if the guy has that scores. If Japan still had a film industry these days, I'm sure he would have done a few. Yeah. But it's a tremendous score, scope filmmaking. This is put out by Neptune Media, I think they're calling themselves Neptune Video now. Or no, they're still Neptune Media. It is currently not available on Amazon. They are withholding it from sale right now. They're going to put it back on sale soon, within a few months. I'm told by the company's owner that he said there's been a lot of demand for it, but they're just kind of waiting right now, and then it should be available again soon. But right now they're not even used copies on Amazon. No one has traded this film in, and it did sell pretty decently.
Okay.
So it's a really good, underappreciated film. This is the problem I've often expressed about samurai films in America and probably other countries. We tend to kind of overpraise stuff like the Baby Cart films, or, you know, we love the Zatoichi movies, which are fun.
Or The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise.
Right. Or Shogun with Richard Chamberlain, dude. I'm old. But there's so many really great samurai movies that have never been seen outside of Japan in English-friendly editions, or, you know, there's some gray market stuff out there. There's tons of them, and, you know, they were just turning them out like Hollywood turned out westerns in the 50s and 60s or in 40s.
Don't they call them Chambara films?
Yes, Chambara films. I don't want to get too fancy for our listeners, and we don't like this type of talk here. But
the noise the swords make, chum chum chum, or something.
Supposedly, supposedly is related to the sound effect of the swords or something. It's like
that's what I had heard, but I didn't know if that was true.
We've actually got a brand of dog food out here called Chum.
Right, but
Chum's like, shut up, just shut up, Stuart, for God's sake.
A lot of people think only Criterion is ever going to release the good Japanese films, and that's total bullshit. There's other companies that are doing it that need support. So I would say when this film is available again, by all means, get it. It's really good. I sat there just completely sucked into it for a couple of hours. It's a good, long, epic, exhaustive film. It's the type of movie you want on your shelf to say this is what a Japanese movie is, not some cheap, you know, woman ninja porn or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
like
some
Lady Snowblood or some bullshit.
Lady Snowblood, I think, is very overrated. A lot of people love it. I think it.
Well, like any of the stuff with Makio Kaji, like people, I think people overpraise it because Quentin Tarantino loves it. You know,
they overpraise it because he loves it and she's hot.
Yeah,
that's it. It's the only reason. Those films haven't done much for me. I've watched them. I'm just like, I'd rather see some rare, you know, Tomisaburo Wakayama movie like Killer Priest than this stuff. I don't know why they're not importing the really good you know, tough mainstream samurai movies of the 60s. And I think it's also, someone had suggested once that unless it's Kurosawa or who's the other director everybody loves, Hideo Gosha, it's like unless it's them, the movie is usually released in America because it panders to a certain fetish. Like, you know, topless like ninjas or tattooed women or bondage. You know, it's always just like weird stuff. That's the type of
right. It's like in America, so it has to be directed by Kurosawa or starring Toshirô Mifune or Tetsuya Nakadai or somebody like that. You know, and you know,
and there's
don't and those movies are great. Like the Kurosawa stuff's great. You know, the Tetsuya Nakadai like Sword of Doom, great movie. But you know, like, but there's this whole world of Japanese samurai movies that you know are kind of forgotten over here.
Yeah, because
we're not even known about.
And the guy who runs Neptune Media is a big fan of the genre, and this was a film he really loved and thought this is what the American market needs. They need to see this, and it's a good transfer. It's a good disc. Blu-ray, you know what? You gotta understand, not everything's going to make it the Blu-ray that's great that you need to see, so don't wait for a Blu-ray release. It's like I've said before, and I've always been pissed about this. One of the biggest stars in Japan in the 60s was Ken Takakura, who we've seen in Black Rain and the Yakuza over here in America. None of his best Toei Yakuza films, and he made like just a lot of them. Look at the IMDb. It's stunning. None of them are available over here subtitled. It's crazy. It's like Criterion should at least you know, do an American version of the Ken Takakura box set that's available in Japan with subtitles. Just put English subtitles on it and port the transfers over. And let Americans see this stuff. Because those Yakuza movies are visually stunning and amazing. And Ken Takakura is just a fantastic actor. He's a Clint Eastwood of Japan. Hardly represented in America on home video. Because somebody wanted, you know, Ninja Titty Women Part 5.
Yeah.
So I'm like, sorry about that.
Stuart bought 10 copies.
Yeah. Of the previous four.
Stuart's being shamed a lot on this episode.
Part 5 answered a lot of previously unanswered questions in the first four films.
Yeah, why wasn't there enough titties in the first four movies?
Right. But yeah, it's Kenji Masumi's The Last Samurai. That's how you get to find it on Amazon. It will be
thank God,
re-released.
Thank God we got the full guinea pig box set. We needed that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Jesus. Evil Dead Trap.
Charlie Sheen, thanks for making that... famous. Thank
I
you.
Called the
thanks.
FBI. I'm so concerned.
Thanks a lot, asshole.
Actually, a friend of mine, who I talked about on the show before, has he got it on video. Goes, I don't know. I think it's real. So,
oh no.
yes. I don't know. I looked at it. It looks pretty real. I don't know.
The guinea pig movies
and he
are
showed
like.
It.
The guinea pig movies are basically like if you know you hear the term torture porn. The guinea pig movies are torture porn. Like it's there's no plot. It's just women being like brutalized, and like apparently Charlie Sheen saw one of them on TV and called the cops.
Dickhead.
No, he bought a videotape from Chaz Ballin, the late Chaz Ballin who did the Deep Red fanzine.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The guy who did the gore score.
He bought it from him, and then he called the FBI, and the FBI went to see Chaz Ballin, and he said, look, it's a trick. This is how they did it. It's the oldest trick in the book. They used to do it in Paris, and it's like, you know, it's an old stage trick.
Mm-hmm.
And but, yeah, my old friend thought it was real, and me and Garo were just laughing. And,
you know, just imagine.
I don't know. It's pretty real to me.
Your friend watched Guinea Pig 3, Mermaid in a Manhole, and he was like, I think they found a mermaid in a manhole.
I asked Garo about that guy when I was with him in Boston. He just started laughing. First thing he did was start laughing about him. I said, do you know, And he goes, oh, man.
But anyway, I give The Last Samurai a 9.
A 9?
Yeah, strong recommendation. If you're into the Chambara films, you must see this film.
Chum, chum, chum.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, with that, we will take a break and we'll be back in a moment or two.
Hi, I'm Matt Dawson. I like to eat
to cream of shrimp soup, cream of mushroom soup. I like to eat Fig Newtons in my kiddie pool while drinking the last can of Billy Beer in existence.
Hey, I'm Bill.
Matt, do Bill.
Venezuela, motherfuckers!
I wish I were dead.
No, let's see you start a story here. Like, wait. I really want to tell you about the story.
Really,
it's going to take 10 minutes. Blah, 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 blah. I really don't want to talk about the story. And you can find those two gringos and Super Mexican on the next Super Podcast. Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
Okay, and we are back. And now we're going to get into my review, and the film I'm going to be talking about is one from 1980 called Up the Academy, the Mad Magazine film, which for many years was not known as that because Mad, in all their infinite wisdom, decided to have their name removed and anything associated with their company removed from the film due to their absolute disgust with how much they disliked it. But I'll get into that in a minute. Anyway, this film, for me, I'm going to briefly give a bit of a backstory, was I had seen the VHS tape of this, the old big clamshell Warner Brothers tapes, for years and thought, what is this? And was never smart enough to rent it out for a dollar or something for a week. Just never did it. I just because the runtime, I think, on the back of the box, if I remember correctly, was 80 minutes. I'm like, this is just too short. I don't want to, you know, spend just 80 minutes. I want to get something a bit more out of it. So... And I didn't recognize the faces on the front except for Ralph Macchio. And I'm like, I'm out of here. Because there was no Mad Magazine sort of captions or banners on there to make me aware. Otherwise, I would have read it out because I grew up reading Mad Magazine. I've actually just restarted reading Mad Magazine via the Absolutely Mad DVD, which is every issue of Mad from 1956, I think it is, or 52 up till 2005. So there's a... shit ton of reading to be on there. 600 plus issues.
So Stuart, what was your favorite Dave Berg article, The Lighter Side of Midget Throwing?
Yeah, probably. I've not gone through all the issues, but yeah.
There's a nod to all the Mad Magazine readers out there.
Yeah, The Lighter Side of, yeah, I remember those. Yeah, definitely. And the old Spy versus Spy and yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Spy versus Spy was great.
Some of my favorites were the Dave Berg strips, just because when Dave Berg would draw himself in the strip, yeah, one of the characters like reacting badly. He drew these great expressions. Something I think Mad readers love.
Were any of you guys actually Mad readers as kids?
Read the old collections of like Mad About the 60s, Mad About the 70s, you know?
Okay. Right. And John?
Early 80s, I was buying Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
When I was it's kind of like Marvel Comics, Mad Magazine. It was basically the standard reading of the day.
Yeah. So I remember the first Mad I read was 19, had to be 81 at least. I remember the American Werewolf in London spoof they did in there. It was very funny. And you remember the actual covers? John used to be able to fold them over and there'd be a, and make another picture.
The Al Jaffe designed those, I believe.
Right, yeah. Right.
Those are always really cool. And but I didn't want to ruin the Mad.
Yeah, really.
I still probably have a bunch of my issues like in a box.
You know damn well they did that because they were saying we can get two copies bought from the same person. This one is going to fold it and one who wants to keep it as a keepsake and not do it. So, yeah, smart marketing there by Mad. Anyway, so, yeah, I got this Absolutely Mad DVD, which is like nearly filled to the brim. You know, obviously 600-plus issues. There's a lot of reading to be done there. Anyway, so getting back to Up the Academy, I'd seen the tape around, just thought, oh, what is this? Like I said, didn't know it was a Mad film. And then forgot about it, basically, until you, John, pointed it up or brought it up on the Partly Swope episode we did that Robert Downey Sr. had directed it, which I did not know. Of course, didn't know him back then, but, you know, I didn't know at all, for that matter.
Right.
Anyway... rewind to about 2 weeks back. I'm out in the local retail chain out here, just looking around for movies, etc. Out in the barbecue section and as well, and have a look down here. And then there was a little hidden section of a movie called The Mega Movie Sale. Really original title there. So I'm just flipping through there, and holy shit, here's Up the Academy for $5. I'm like, Okay, I've never seen this on the shelf. If I have, I've not thought about it. For $5, it's basically a throwaway, but it ended up being $4 because there was 20% off sale that day as well. So it was like $4 a throw. If it's at worst, it's a coaster, or it goes into the pile, whatever. Went upstairs, put the projector on, stuck it in, and laughed my fucking ass off. This thing was so funny. It was hysterical. It's got Robert Downey Sr. He didn't write it, but it's got his stamp all over it, his style of humor. It's actually, it could be classed as racist if you look at it today. You know, easily offend the people out there who can't get through, say, 28 minutes of our, say, Cannibal Run 2 episode. Maybe offended by it. Yeah, if you can't cope with the brief political talk and then horrible humour, which is basically no better than an open mic night, if you ask me, we'll probably be offended by it. You know, revert back to their show, whatever. But I thought it was hysterical. I really expected nothing of it. I read a little bit about it, and it had been plagued with issues. Post-production, the actor in the film who plays, I forgot his freaking name now.
Is it Ron Liebman?
Ron Liebman, yeah. I can't remember his character's name in there. He disowns the film. He had his name removed from the credits, the titles, promotional material, everything. Even the Wikipedia page with the cast on there does not have his name. Oh, he does have it on there, sorry. Okay. Everything else has it removed. I've read articles about Ron Liebman where he has a stipulation when he goes to conventions he will not sign or talk about up the Academy.
What the why?
He just hates it. He just absolutely hates it.
I don't get these actors who have this disdain for their own work. Like, I don't know. Like, it's weird. I don't know.
Okay. Also, Mad Magazine themselves, everybody's affiliated with them with horribly disappointed with the film. They paid $30,000 to Warner Brothers to remove all references to Mad from the film when it was released on home video. And also, according to this, Mad's publisher, William Gaines, issued personal handwritten apologies to every person that wrote to the magazine to complain. Now, the references to Mad in there are, and I'm going to get to this, at the start, you see, the film's about three teenage boys who are sent to a military academy. Ralph Macchio is one of them. This is 1980, so it's his first film. Looks like he's about 13 in this, but he's probably about 35 in real life at the time. two other boys who I don't recognize. Ralph Macchio is the son of a mobster who gets sent there. There's a black kid who is fooling around with his stepmother, and he gets sent to an academy. And there's also a rich Arab teenage boy who's sent to America to the academy. And so Downey Sr. is getting all the stereotypes together to play into the racial humour that comes into it. Because there are moments there where there are a few N-bombs dropped in this movie. There is a scene of the Arab boy praying to cans of Castrol oil, which is could be deemed as racially uncouth these days.
There was a lot of fucked up humor in National Lampoon and Mad Magazine and stuff.
I think Downey Sr. went a lot further. Okay, because this film is obviously trying to cash in on the National Lampoon's Animal House and Stripes. It's a mixture of that. I found this to be funnier than Stripes. I've never really liked Stripes. I thought it's way overrated. I remember seeing it. I saw it in the drive-in in 81 when it came in. I'm like, it's not funny. I rented it again on VHS. I'm like, still not funny. I watched the extended cut that came out on DVD a number of years later, and it's still not funny. So,
I love Stripes so much.
Not giving Stripes any more chance.
I've seen Stripes like 20 times on cable.
No, I think Up the Academy's way funnier. Yeah.
But the funny thing is Mad Magazine, you talk about the level where the humor goes. Mad Magazine was never beyond a PG, really.
That's true. No,
it wasn't.
I'm thinking of
no
National
profanity. Right, like National Lampoon was pretty far out. Mad Magazine was never edgy, or I mean, it was funny. It just wasn't anything beyond a PG, soft PG rating.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 90s, it would get kind of PG-13 with some stuff.
Yeah, I heard about that. Like people were offended that it was actually.
Yeah, my parents wouldn't let me get it when I was a kid, but I could see why looking through it when I was a kid. I remember they had this Jurassic Park parody, and it was like Jurassic's Had It Park.
Right. Well, and their Invasion of the Body Snatchers satire was Invasion of the Booty Snatchers.
I stand corrected. This actually has four Teenage Boys. I forgot about the American, the All American Boys while on there.
Right.
Who are
But I was at a Half Price Books the other day, and I was flipping through the vinyl, and I found a National Lampoon's The White Album, and it had a Klan gathering on the cover.
Oh, you bought it, really, honestly, right?
I haven't bought it. No, I didn't buy it.
Oh, that's probably going to be rare as shit. I'd be picking it up for you.
It was a staple at used record stores in the 80s.
Really?
Yeah, I used to see it all the time.
The White Album?
Yeah.
He said it had like a bunch of Klansmen on it.
Jesus. But, yeah, so you got these four teenage boys who are all sent to an academy. Now, one, the American boy in the film, his girlfriend is also shipped off to an academy further up the way. And pretty much the premise of the film is to go in, break in, and go see the girls at the academy there. It does have Stacey Nelken in there as the girlfriend of this guy, and she looks fucking hot in this movie. She's just super hot in this film. You got Barbara Bach as well as the teacher who teaches about firearms and ammunition in there. And you're basically just all the boys in there drooling. And you got one scene where the guys, one of the kids is being spoken to. He goes, "Can you shut up? I'm trying to come." So, yeah, humor's pretty out there for sure.
It's very, very un-Mad Magazine.
Very un-Mad. And I think that's why they wanted to disassociate themselves with this film, is because it's like, And like I said, I couldn't work out why. Now, the references as to why Mad wanted the name removed, you do see in the DVD credits, now the restored DVD, now that Warner Brothers have taken over Mad, they restored this DVD, thankfully, back to its original theatrical, the original uncut print of it, uncut version. And I got to tell you guys, I had seen nothing in this movie, no trailers, no nothing at all. So I popped the film in, and they had the opening, and they had the opening credits with the names, and they had the opening credits was a bunch of toy soldiers lined up and one knocked down in like a domino effect of them all falling down. The camera pans up and like, I barely geek out shit. I'm going to say it now. I barely geek out. But holy fuck, Alfred E. Newman is the one knocking over the toy soldiers. And I fucking lost my shit. I mean, that night I was sitting down, I wasn't feeling very well, I was a bit under the weather, I had a mouth, I decided to make a chicken vindaloo to make myself heat it up and hopefully get better. And holy fucking,
something to do tonight.
Exactly.
Tonight.
It sounds like a Ramones reference right there.
It's like a Ramones.
It's a reference to the Ramones.
Ramones.
Yeah. And like I had a mouthful of chicken vindaloo and rice and I went, "It's Alfred! It's Alfred!" And just fucking spat out all this food all over the floor because I just saw Alfred E. Newman on the screen. I'm like, geek the fuck out, big time. Because like I said, I grew up reading Mad and Alfred was just like my fucking idol. So yeah, I was like, "There's Alfred!" So anyway, I watched the movie and laughed my fucking ass off. It was that funny. I thought it was hysterical. And I did some more reading around on it. And and just found out all these things about Ron Liebman and his absolute disgust for the film and Mad's dislike for it as well. There's about, I believe, 5 minutes of Mad references in there that were cut. Obviously, the picture of Alfred, or the shot of Alfred knocking over the soldiers at the start. The end sequence, which features Alfred E. Newman hitchhiking. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I would like to see the VHS print if I could find it used somewhere for even a fiver, I'd pick it up just out of curiosity's sake. It would have been nice if on this DVD they had done like a branching system of actually just getting both versions on there for curiosity's sake, but it wasn't to be. But I'm just thankful that we've actually got the uncut version now on DVD. Now, speaking of the DVD, if you want to buy this film, if you live here in Australia, you can pick it up basically at your local Big W for $5. Okay? Don't look for it at JB Hi-Fi or Target. I don't believe they have it. Go to your local Big W, and it's a fiver on the shelf, so worth every cent. How, North America, you're pretty much screwed. If you want to buy this on DVD on disc format, you're looking at $50 upwards. It's gone out of print. But if you do want to buy it, you can buy the SD download off of Amazon for $6.99. So there's your option there. And here's the uncut version too. But I highly recommend this film. I don't go looking for it on YouTube as a full movie upload. Ain't there. So buy it, you cheap bastards, for God's sake. Because it's, I would reckon it's worth every cent. I'm giving this 9.5 out of 10.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow. I saw it at Big Lots for like $3 and passed it up.
Yeah, okay. That was,
well,
your loss.
Going by prior reputation. And
John, you don't strike me as the sort of person to be really worried about prior reputation of films.
Well, it's not my bag, man.
Which I honestly think because it's Robert Downey Sr. and it's so far left of, well, so far to the right, I should say, of Mad's style. I think you should give it a watch. Honestly, I think you'd probably say it wasn't as bad as you think.
Yeah, but it's like I've gotten to a point where it's hard for me to seek out stuff that I think wasn't as bad, you know, or it was okay. I mean, it's probably something that if it was on Netflix for like a couple of months, I'd probably check it out, or Hulu Plus or whatever streaming service.
I think, I think he's basically give us the nod that he just doesn't want to fucking see it.
Yeah.
He's like, ah, well.
I'm not into teen slob comedies. It's never been my genre. I just was never into it.
So, oh, someone came to my door and rang the doorbell and said, here, with every flow hive, you get a free copy of Up the Academy. Maybe I'll watch it then.
If I put it on my Amazon wish list and one of y'all bought it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, my birthday's coming up, remember, in June or whatever the hell it is.
You're going to force a Rob Zombie movie on me.
Yeah.
It's like, well, John, we're going to watch Up the Academy or Rob Zombie's 31. It's like,
Rob Zombie's Clown House or whatever the fuck.
Clown House. Oh, Jesus.
I think about half the people are waiting to see that film to see how bad it's going to be. It's become a sport. I mean, it's like an Ed Wood movie. I think it's a sport to see how bad his film can be and if people can pretend to like it.
Oh, Jesus. And there's going to be a lot of people who are like, oh, this is awesome, you know.
This is misunderstood.
Oh, God. You know, Rob Zombie, he's an auteur, man.
It's a masterpiece. You know.
He's you know, I think his Halloween might be better than Carpenter's, you know.
Oh,
I hope nobody's ever said that, but.
Oh, you know. No, that's something happened. I think something happened.
Oh, God.
Because, you know, it became a retro thing to start bashing Carpenter and bashing Romero, so.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers.
All right. So, anyway, yeah, that's Up the Academy, and I highly, highly recommend you go seek it out.
Boy, I remember when it was in and out of theater so quick. It was the movie was like a rumor I was told about. Oh, there was, you know, my cousin was a big Mad fan and reader, and he was telling me, he told me all about Up the Academy, and he said Mad paid money to have their name removed from it. And I was like,
damn.
Really? And they were dismissing it in their pages of their magazine like every month.
I tell you, I reckon you guys should watch it because I think you'll say. I mean, if you're going to go with the preconceived notion that you're just going to dislike it, you're probably going to dislike it. But there's going to be some humor in there. You're going to be like, shit, really? They said that? They got away with that?
It's probably because we wanted Don Martin characters in the movie.
Eh, I don't know. But I think it's. Is it as good as Putney Swope? No, it's not. Because Putney Swope, I rewatched that again.
It is. Come on.
Well, I watched Putney Swope again just straight after I'd watched Up the Academy because I wanted to see it again. I was like, it was fucking amazing.
Up
that
the Academy
fun?
Goes for $50 on Amazon. Jesus.
Jeez.
Well, I just said that, you deaf heads. Fucking hell.
Sorry. Stock up. I would have made some money.
No, it's you can get it for as cheap as 18. So, but if you want it new, you got to pay out the nose.
Well, you could always buy the Australian copy for $5, which would be, what, about 40 cents in American dollars at the moment?
You can stream it on Amazon for $7, looks like.
Jeez, I've just said all this, obviously. Hey, talk to a wall, Stuart.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's all right, mate.
Sorry, I was also sharing our review on that off-mic stuff.
Boy.
If you check the Facebook page, you'll see what I'm saying.
Oh, yes, okay.
Join the Facebook group, the discussion group, and find out all about it.
Yeah, yeah. You jump in there, or we'll backtrack a few days, and you'll find it on there.
You'll find what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, that's that for this time around. Just we thought we'd get there and plug some films that we liked that we think you guys should check out. And if you're going to look for John's The Last Samurai and do a Google search like I just did, you're pretty much going to find it Tom Cruise pile of shit. So
Jim Misumi is The Last Samurai, but
yeah, what I'll do
1974.
No, well, when we do the show notes, you guys will find the links to these films to buy in Amazon and elsewhere. So you can trust us. And we hope you got through the first 28 minutes of this easy enough and managed to listen on and liked what you heard. And we'll sign off for this time around. Okay, lads. Say goodbye.
Adios.
Mahalo, and leave us an iTunes review. Thank you.
Please.
Yeah, motherfuckers.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
Interior.